Good evening, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Zach Ebarb, and tonight we are getting into the question that we talked about last Monday. We didn't come in this Monday. We're having some technical difficulties, lots of bad weather and snow and all kinds of things that happened here, and so trying to actually get in and get everything set up and being able to try to keep it up and running. Even just recording, the things just became a mess. And so we decided we'd come in tonight and do the podcast with you guys this evening, make sure that things were working the way that they were supposed to, so that we can enjoy this podcast together and learn a little bit together. And I want to thank all of you personally. The last episode apparently garnered a lot of attention. You guys really just were very interested in that particular subject matter, and so I'm glad that all of you are enjoying this. Hope that you're learning something from it. Don't forget, as always, go and leave in the comments whatever Bible questions you have or whatever you're studying, and you know, things that maybe have tripped you up or that you're curious about. You know, leave those in the comments, and we'll make sure to answer those questions to you independently. And then, of course, we'll talk about them like we are tonight on here. And I gave you guys a sneak peek yesterday into what we were going to talk about tonight, because I'm kind of trying to do that where y'all have a little bit of time that if it wasn't a question that you asked, you can go do a little research, maybe come to your own conclusions before you get here and listen to me and what my thoughts are and what I believe that the Bible is saying about those particular questions and subject matter. And so tonight we are talking about the question that we received back during the 3 weeks that I was about ready to drop dead. And the question was, do you believe we are in or near the end times? We've kind of dealt with a question like this before. It was a question dealing directly with Revelation and essentially what's going to happen during the Revelation, what's going to go on, and what will occur and how it will occur and when will it occur. And this one, I say, is probably very similar, but I wanted to address it anyway because it's more a question of, do you believe all of those things we've talked about are happening right now? You know, are we going to see Christ return in our lifetime? And I want to start by, first of all, giving my opinion. Because truthfully, this is more an opinionated question than it is one that really we can have a straight biblical answer for. And a few reasons that that is the case is, number one, no man knoweth the hour or the time in which the Son of Man will appear. We'll start there. Number two, the description around the things that are going to occur has a lot of ambiguity to it. It's a very vague, what's the best way to put it? A very vague prophecy, a very vague explanation of what's going to go on. And not only is it very vague, but it doesn't give a lot of specifics that we can really grasp onto. There's a couple of things that I think are very, very important when we're talking about this that we need to take into consideration and think about and really stew on, for lack of a better way of putting it. But at the same time, this is my opinion about this question. I'm going to give you my opinion, which means that's exactly what it is. This is what I think the scriptures are saying or revealing about this subject. And there's no way I can biblically prove it. I can give you a very good argument, but I cannot indefinitely prove my point of view. My point of view is this. I do not think that we are, quote unquote, near or coming into or in the end of time. And I don't think this for a couple of reasons that I'm going to give you my personal thoughts, my reasons, and then I'm going to walk you through a text that's not specifically about Christians and about the church, but it's still about the end of time in the book of Matthew that I think gives us a very good picture. Now, it's not a picture of exactly what's going to happen as far as God's people are concerned in the sense of the church. It's dealing with Israel and Jerusalem specifically, and what's going to happen to them. And it kind of moves into the church just a little bit towards the end, but for the most part, it's even keel about Israel. However, there are a lot of things that are talked about, even though they are directed towards Israel and what Israel needs to be watching and preparing for, that we personally are still going to be able to see and observe in our lifetime. The second reason that I don't believe that we are in or near or, you know, close to the end of times right at this moment is because I believe that what's really going on and quite frankly, why all of us are even thinking this way has very little to do with the Bible and a whole lot more to do with the state of our culture and the state of our nation. And when we're talking about our culture and our nation and why I think that's greatly influencing it, number one, we have had a really bad idea in the United States for a very, very long time. And not just amongst everyday churchgoers, but pastors in the pulpit. And don't misunderstand me. Historically speaking, culturally speaking, there are times in America's history we've been exceptional, and there are times that we definitely have not been, and we are presently in one of those situations. But we have brought the idea of American exceptionalism into the pulpit. And what I mean by we've brought that into the pulpit in a lot of ways, I refer to it, and now somebody stole my book idea, by the way. He didn't literally steal it, but I saw the book come out. It was about the American gospel, and I went, I knew I should have wrote that book. But I saw that the other day because that's what I've always termed it, is the American gospel. And what I mean is that we treat the United States as if it's going to be a part of what is going on in the Bible. And I'm here to tell you that there are only a handful of nations mentioned in the Bible at this moment. The United States is not one of them. One such nation that will exist still is Israel. One such nation that will still exist, and in fact rather not exist, but actually be created as a result of the end of times, will be New Rome or New Babylon, whichever particular name you want to take, that's going to be an empire that encompasses aspects of both of those groups. But the United States is not, it's not listed. We're not a part of the breakdown. We're not one of the ones. That's not to say that we won't still be around during that time, but historically speaking, empires rise and fall. And right now we are in a falling. And I think that's why everybody's asking this question, is because the world is literally coming to an end and burning down around us here in the United States. And for some reason, we kind of get this idea that if we go, so goes the whole world. And that's not entirely true. And that's certainly observably not entirely true. There's a lot of other countries right now that are being much, much smarter than we are. Hungary is a very good example of that. Not that I agree with everything that they are doing, but they are heavily Catholic, and I do, not that I dislike Catholics, but I do have a huge problem with Catholic doctrine. I think that it derails extraordinarily fast, as far as the Bible is concerned. But they are a Catholic nation, and they are living and acting and doing things much, much better than we are right now. So, you know, and now there's some things that are not so great, but there are some very good aspects as well that are better than what we're handling it. And so since we kind of have our whole world burning down around us here in the States, we're all like, well, that's it. Jesus must be coming back. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but even if the United States burns to the ground, that has nothing to do with Jesus' timetable. There is nowhere in the Bible that we are listed or mentioned. I know there have been people that have tried to write books about the United States and Revelation and Germany and Revelation and and there's no basis for those. There's no foundational basis for it. There's no historical basis for it. And someone who tries to make those arguments has not paid attention to history long enough. There are entire nations, cultures, and civilizations that were literally wiped off the face of the earth. The Edomites. Y'all ever met an Edomite? Nope. You ever met an Ammonite? Nope. Have you ever met a Canaanite at all? And don't get smart with me and say, well, I've met a Palestinian or an Arab or an Israelite, and they abide in what used to be Canaan, therefore they're Canaanites. Ha, 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 ha. Don't give me that nonsense. No, you've never met those people. Meaning that there is plenty and plenty and plenty of nations and cultures and creeds that were obliterated historically and no longer exist. And so trying to make an argument for any of those nations is kind of silly. For all you know, Germany could burn to the ground tomorrow. The European Union could burn to the ground tomorrow. The United States could burn to the ground tomorrow. And so I think that not only is that a big basis for this question, but the reason that this question even forms from that basis is that we have this idea that the United States is somehow incorporated in the destiny of the scriptures, and that's incorrect. There's no way to know that. We may or may not be, but the Bible does not ever explicitly say anything about us. And, you know, I live in this country, and my family's in this country, and I want this country to thrive. However, I'm also a realist, and I know that empires rise and empires fall, and right now we are in falling. And then my third reason. And my third reason is the biblical part. Now, what we're going to be looking at is we're going to be looking at Matthew chapter 24, and I want to preface from the beginning, this is about 90% has nothing to do with the Gentile nations or with the churches. Most of this deals specifically with Israel. And when that switch flips, I will tell you. But everything we're about to read has to do explicitly with the Jewish people, with the Hebrew people, with Israel, however you want to flip that coin. Because Jesus' disciples come to him privately, and they ask him, basically, when's the world going to come to an end? Okay? That's essentially what happens, because Jesus tells them, you know, hey, you see this temple? I tell you, there won't be one stone left upon another. That shall not be thrown down. Meaning that Jesus tells them that the great temple that everybody loves is going to be destroyed. And so they said, you know, when shall these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world? They're freaking out at this point because Jesus told them that the temple that they love and have known and have grown up in and have worshiped in is going to disappear. And Jesus tells them, beginning in verse 4, he says, take heed that no man deceive you. For many shall come in my name saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars, that you be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Meaning that Jesus is not talking about the tribulation. Jesus is not talking about what you and I understand to be the end times. And just in case you're confused by what I mean by that, I want to define for you what I mean by end times, because a lot of people have very different definitions and interpretations of this phrase. Okay? So when I say end times, and I think probably 60-70% of people, when they say end times, they mean what is referred to as the Great Tribulation, which is that seven-year period that is written about in Revelation and in the book of Daniel. The Antichrist, the false prophet, the rise of New Rome, all those things, okay? So when I say end time, Or if I say, you know, Revelation or the Apocalypse or, you know, anything that refers to everything you've ever known being destroyed, that is what I am referring to. And that is what Jesus is referring to. He says, but the end, that 7-year period, is not yet. Well, so what's going on long before we ever get to that great tribulation? What is happening? Well, first of all, Jesus tells us there are going to be people who come who are pretending to be Christ. This happens all the time, and this happens way more than you realize. In fact, probably within the last, would it be about 50, 60 years, maybe a little longer. It's been a hot minute since I looked at this. There have been a lot of mass genocides and cults that have occurred within the United States, by the way. Not even in other countries am I talking about. I'm talking about people who started in the States and lived in the States who believed and taught that they were God. There was the cult in Waco, Texas, or around Waco, Texas. That I cannot remember the guy's name. All their names always completely and totally go out of my brain, probably because I don't believe in giving monsters fame for the things they do. But he led a cult, and he taught them that he was the second coming of Christ. And I mean, there were a lot of people that died under this crazy man. There was another individual, I cannot remember his name, but he took his cult to South America, and he ended up killing a congressman, and then he convinced about 95% of the people in the cult to kill themselves by ingesting cyanide and Kool-Aid. And he taught that he was the second coming of Jesus Christ. So the first thing that Jesus says you're going to see, not in the end, but before the end starts to come, is people coming pretending to be the second coming of Christ. And he says they will deceive many. And even now, if you get on the internet and you type in, I am sure that, and I haven't done this, but you feel free to do it, report back to me on what happens. I think I'm probably right in my hypothesis. If you typed, I am Jesus, and type that in Google, I am sure a million YouTube videos will come up of crazy quacks telling the world that they are Jesus Christ reincarnate and they are the second coming. And I'm sure you'll be shocked to find that they do indeed have a small following, even if it's only a couple hundred people or, you know, less than 100 people. I mean, even if it's one person, there's an issue. There's a problem. And so Jesus says, look, do not be deceived. Pay attention. There will be a lot of people that come and pretend to be me. But do not be troubled by those things. Jesus then says you're going to hear of wars and rumors of wars, meaning that there is going to be a monstrous amount of conflict worldwide, and there's going to be rumors of wars that are about to start or will happen or never did happen. They're just brought up and intended to scare you. And I know what you're thinking right now. Well, there it is, Mr. Zach. Right now, there's a war in Ukraine, and there's a war in between Israel and the Gaza Strip. There's a war in Africa amongst some tribes. There's the potential of China and Taiwan. And I'm going to say something that's very unpopular, but that has to do with the fact that we have a very, very poor group of individuals leading this nation. If we had anybody, literally anybody else, even my 3-year-old, leading this nation, that those wars wouldn't even be going on. And what Jesus is describing is just all-out war breaking out in different places all over. And this is not, Jesus isn't saying you're going to hear of like two wars and rumors of wars. The idea is that war is going to be widespread. And it is also going to be a situation where if a war isn't going on, there are people hinting about a war starting. Well, we haven't really ever seen in our lifetime this level of war. And I know what you're thinking. You're immediately going to go, World War One, World War Two. Yeah, but those, we call those world wars simply because they occurred worldwide as far as how the nations were laid out. But you didn't have a lot of countries that were engaged in it. I mean, World War One was Austria, Germany, a little bit of Poland, Italy, basically versus France, England, us, and a handful of other, Austria, a handful of other places. Okay. And then in World War II, that one again was astronomically Japan and Germany fighting France and Britain, eventually Russia, because Russia started out on their team, us, and Canada was involved a little bit, and the Australians were involved a little bit as far as the Japanese, the Pacific Theater is concerned. But even that's not, like, those are the strongest nations in the world. I'll give you that. But that's not every nation in the world. Like, India didn't have a dog in that fight. Iran and Iraq weren't involved in that fight. Israel wasn't even involved in that fight. Now, yes, I know Israel as a nation hadn't been unified yet by that time. That happened after World War II. But, you know, there weren't any Palestinian Arabs that were in colonial Britain that were helping fight that fight. China wasn't, I mean, they were kind of involved, but not really. They were involved simply because Japan was attacking them too, but they weren't playing on our team by any means. They were kind of fighting their own independent war against Japan. So we've really never seen what all Jesus is talking about. What Jesus is talking about is there's going to be war all over the place, and where there's not war, there's going to be rumor of war. And we don't have that level of an atmosphere yet. Don't get me wrong. We're moving every day closer and closer to that. There's more and more of these little skirmishes and kind of, because even Ukraine and Russia, I wouldn't call full out war. It's more of a standstill and has been for a long time. You know, there's going to be more of that nonsense as we move closer and closer to the end of times. But it's definitely not at the caliber yet at which Jesus Christ is describing. And I'm not saying this to tell you, oh, well, I've got plenty of time to get my life right with God. You need to get your life right with God right now, because when this does get here, you're going to wish you had already gotten the boat ready before somebody puts a hole in the front of it. Okay? And so Jesus describes wars and rumors of wars. He describes people coming in his name. And then he says, but don't be troubled, for all these things must come to pass. Meaning that we can't even begin to usher in the great tribulation without all this stuff happening. And I'm about to show you why that is as we get further down. He says in verse 7, for nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. Meaning, again, this is not the great tribulation. This is just the beginning of a suffering that we've already been dealing with since Jesus Christ ascended. There have been wars and nations and empires, and all this has been going on since Jesus ascended in one form or another. In fact, we could look back historically at periods of time that are much worse than the period of time that you and I are living in right now. Culturally and socially speaking, we're in deep water. We're doing things that have not been done in an age, literally. But a lot of the foolishness that you're seeing going on in the United States right now went on in Rome before the end of Rome. Within the last 100 years of the Roman Empire, these were the kinds of things that were going on, of men pretending to be women and women pretending to be men and gladiator games and, you know, just all kinds of crazy nonsense. I guess you could take that with a grain of salt, that maybe we'll get 100 more years out of this run before everything collapses in on itself. But Jesus says, look, this stuff is all going to happen before. Famines and pestilences and earthquakes and every nation fighting against every nation and kingdom against kingdom. And it's going to be happening in divers, meaning diverse, multiple places. Meaning you're going to see this stuff going on all over the world. It's not going to be, well, we got a famine in the United States and we got a famine in China. The end of the world is here. No. It's going to be that the entire world is just thrown headfirst into what Jesus calls the beginning of sorrows, meaning that the whole world is going to be thrown into great suffering and great catastrophe. And this is not the great tribulation. This is just the stuff leading up to it. He says, then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you, and you will be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Meaning that now Jesus is kind of starting to talk to them in the sense of their Christianity. Because you have to remember, the disciples are Israelites, but they are also disciples of Jesus Christ. And so Jesus is still talking about Israel in a grand scheme, that there's going to be a lot of evil and wicked things inflicted on Israel, the likes of which you and I don't know yet. He says, and then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. Jesus says, look, you're going to be afflicted, you're going to be killed, you're going to suffer, and this is just as true of the church as it is of Israel. He says, there's going to be many that are offended and shall betray one another, meaning people, and shall hate one another, meaning people are going to be turning each other in, and this one's going to be mad at this one, and that one's going to be mad at that one, and there's going to be hatred and murder and just horrible things. Because when Jesus says, and shall hate one another, that's more than like, oh, I can't stand my neighbor. Hate is an emotion that leads to action, meaning violence and murder. I know murder is a form of violence, but I want you to understand the gravity of the violence. This is not merely people are going to be yelling at each other over their fences about what the other one's dog did on their property. They're going to be people killing and fighting, and it's going to be an awful, awful world. Much more awful than it currently is. He says, and because iniquity shall abound, meaning because sin's going to become more and more rampant, and it's going to become more and more rampant because there's going to be all these false prophets who are teaching a false religion that will deceive many. He says, the love of many shall wax cold, meaning that we're not even talking about like love in the biblical godly sense, just love in the sense of basic human connection. There will be many, they don't love people, they can't stand people, there's going to be hatred and violence and evil. And then Jesus says, but he that endure unto the end, the same shall be saved, meaning that not that literally, if you can just hang on, you'll be saved because of your virtue. That's not what Jesus means. He means that if you can survive to the end of all of these things, don't worry, you will be redeemed, you will be saved. But, you know, you gotta live that long. You gotta live long enough to see that come to fruition entirely. He says, and this gospel of the kingdom, meaning the word of God, will be preached in all the world for a witness to all nations, and then shall the end come, meaning that everyone in the world will have the opportunity to know the Word of God and to know what to do with Jesus Christ before the great tribulation starts. Okay? Then Jesus moves into the actual great tribulation. Which is, he says, when ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child, unto them that give suck in those days. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day, for then shall be great tribulation. Such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Then if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Behold, I have told you before. Wherefore it they shall say unto you, behold, he is in the desert, go not forth. Behold, he is in the secret chambers, believe it not. For as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Okay. So, Jesus tells his men, look, all of this, all these wars, all these great things are going to happen before the end. But something else that we know about, and I'm not going to dig into all of the verses in Revelation. You can go and read them. They take place between Revelation chapter 7 and Revelation chapter 15 for the most part. After that, we start kind of getting into the end where Jesus comes back, and there's Armageddon and the great white throne judgment and then the establishment of new heaven and new earth, all these things. Okay. But Revelation, I'd say back up to 6 and go 6 through 15 because it's scattered all throughout there. That's why I'm not going to get into specifics of it with you. Maybe we can, if one of you has a question about one of those specifics, then we'll kind of dive a little bit deeper into that discussion. But we're painted a picture in Revelation about how the world looks during the Great Tribulation, okay? And during the Great Tribulation, there is very clearly a one-world government. There's very clearly a one-world religion. There's very clearly the idea and the concept of a one-world currency. Essentially, there is a very big picture of all of these things that are established before the Great Tribulation. Because you need to keep in mind, Antichrist comes in and he's only around for 7 years. Okay? I mean, he's not around a long time. Look at your world leaders. Look at Biden. I know what you're about to say. Well, that will be an unprecedented time in history. Yes and no. You need to remember that Satan is not all-powerful. He is not omnipotent. He is not omniscient. He is merely a present, and not even in the omni sense. He is present as in he can only be in one place at one time. He does not have the ability to accomplish the things that God can accomplish due to the power and magnificence that God has. And so he is not going to be able to come in and in the first year of the false prophet and the Antichrist set up all of these systems. It is very, very plainly made, in my opinion, in Revelation, that long before the Antichrist really gets to come on the scene, because he's just a man, by the way. We kind of act like, oh, well, he's a man with Satan indwelling him, and that's not the case. He is given over to Satan, but he's just a man. And the false prophet is just a man, too. They're just getting a little bit of juice from Satan himself, okay? They're not going to have the time. And in fact, not only are they not going to have the time, but I think that they are already going to be moving into these positions of authority before the Great Tribulation ever even starts. Because when the Great Tribulation starts, you have the seven seals and the seven trumpets, and I mean in the literal sense, all of hell just comes down on the world. Within those first seven, you have a third of the world destroyed. Not only land, but sea, and I mean it's a disaster in every sense of the word. And that is going to allow Antichrist to make his debut. He's going to come in and he's going to save the world, basically. We lost a third of the people and a third of the surface of the earth and a third of the water and a third of the fresh water. But he's going to come in, he's going to be the fix-it guy. He's going to make everything right. Everybody's going to love and adore him. It says that he will be so suave, and his false prophet will be so charismatic that if it was not for the power of God, even the elect, meaning those people that are saved, which is another interesting thing, because I tend to fall on what's called post-tribulation, meaning that I believe the church will actually go through the Great Tribulation because it's referred to many times that there's going to be saved people on the earth during the tribulation. And I don't think that saying, oh, well, those will be people that are saved during the tribulation, I think that's a very flimsy argument because it doesn't specify, oh, and these are just the people who got saved during the tribulation. The rest of them are in heaven. That specification never happens. Okay? But it's very clear that these one world systems will already be in existence for the most part. Not saying that the whole world will have caveated to it, but enough of the world that they will control the world in a not literal sense, but in the figurative sense. Kind of like we kind of make a joke that America polices the oceans. Okay? That's an old concept. Well, do we literally police the entire ocean? Do we see every single thing that happens? No, not really. What it means is that we control and watch and protect a vast amount of the oceans in the world. That doesn't mean we are literally everywhere, that if you go 15 feet, you see an American ship. That's not what that means. And so in the figurative sense, there will be these government systems. And even the idea is that a one world religion, meaning that there will be a false church that is established. Jesus talks about, and John talks about in Revelation, that the churches will be the last to go. They will give themselves over to false teaching and false doctrine and a false gospel, and they will propagate that throughout the world. And so, why do I think we're not near or in it? Number one, I think you and I need to look beyond the borders of the United States. There are great things for God happening worldwide. They're just not here. Here, churches are declining. Here, false gospels are being accepted, whether that's the gospel of absolutely no doctrine at all, or that's the American gospel, which is this ultra-conservative legalistic idea. While I understand that you are engrossed every day, especially if you're on this podcast. I know we got a few people from Ghana, Iraq, Iran, even India. I think we saw one the other day, Africa, that kind of log in on from time to time on here. For the most of you that are listening, you're from the United States. I get it. I get it. You're basically in the end of the world, okay? And I understand that that is a terrifying thing, and I understand that it's a saddening thing, disappointing thing, frustrating. I get all the negative emotions that come into this, but I want you to understand that even if the United States ceases to exist, that doesn't mean that you cease to exist and that I cease to exist. And it also does not mean that something new and beautiful and righteous and correct cannot be birthed from the death of the nation. Okay, it's not the end of the world, even if it feels like it to you. Okay, I understand that, and it would probably do you well to go and listen to a guy named John Paggio who talks about all this. I think it would maybe put your mind at ease just a little bit because this has happened all throughout history. It's happened throughout every time period in which we live. in which humanity has existed, there is no end to the amount of history in which a nation rose, and it rose the right way, and it rose in a great way, and it did amazing things, and then it burned to the ground. And while I understand that's hard and that's scary and all that, do not let that taint your view of the Bible or your understanding of the Bible, for that matter. The United States is not mentioned in the New Testament at all. Secondly, I don't think that we are in or near it, because war and false prophets and all that, while I would agree with you that there is a lot of that going on presently, historically, there is not as much of that going on as there has been in other periods of history. And even with all the wars that are going on right now, that this is not the most violent age for humanity. The Dark Ages are called the Dark Ages for a reason. There was a literal worldwide famine and a literal worldwide plague and a literal worldwide war. And Jesus didn't come back during those times, obviously, or we wouldn't still be here. So I don't think it's gotten even as bad as it is going to be. I don't think you and I have the capacity to truly appreciate what Jesus Christ is describing. Humanity, we're very, very bad about wrapping our minds around tragedy and evil and things that, basically things that we would never do to somebody else. We have a very hard time comprehending that, and I don't think you and I even remotely can scratch the surface with our imagination of what this suffering's going to look like, because we try to avoid suffering on a regular basis, for one thing, and then for two, we don't like the idea of suffering at all. So I don't think you and I can truly appreciate just how awful it's going to be. Third, I think that the evidence in the Bible is very clear that there are a lot of systems that have to be established well before the tribulation starts. To have an abomination of desolation, we have to have a temple in Israel. Well, we're not going to have a temple in Israel until the Dome of the Rock is gone. And I know what you're thinking. Oh my goodness, the Dome of the Rock is gone. That'll be the day. Well, exactly. That's going to, for the temple to be rebuilt, the Dome of the Rock is going to have to go. And that is going to be, there's going to be chaos that leads up to that moment like you and I can't even begin to fathom. The Bible says that there's going to be a lot more war and a lot more famine and a lot more hatred and a lot more violence and crime and just the degrading of worldwide society on a level that we have never seen, and that's before the Great Tribulation. That's not during or at the beginning of. That is all occurring before. I don't think that we have the systems in place, such as a one-world religion and a one-world government, that would allow for the Antichrist to maneuver and do the things that he is going to do in such an extraordinarily short amount of time. Not saying that it can't be done, not saying that God won't allow it to be done. I am saying that Satan is not as powerful as God, and therefore I would say that Satan is not going to be able to do much better than humanity itself could do when it comes to these kinds of things. I particularly like to remind people all the time that Satan is basically a teeny tiny bit more powerful than you and I, and not by much. So don't give the devil more credit than he's due. And then fourthly, and my final reason for thinking that we are not in and or near the end, is that we have not even remotely begun to see the true falling away of the church. Yes, churches in the United States are declining. They are declining greatly. I don't think that that has anything to do with the biblical idea of the falling away. I think that has to do with the fact that churches have not fulfilled their true calling in about 100 years in the United States. I think that has to do with the fact that our culture as much, and not just the culture in the sense of secularism. Whew, that was a hard word, wasn't it? In the United States. I think it's also the fact that there is secularism in the church and that it is destroying the church. That we have become much more about what can you give me and not in the sense of what can you teach and preach to me about the Word of God, but more about can you give me coffee? Can you give me Kool-Aid? Can you give me cookies? What programs do you have for my kids? What programs do you have for me? Do you have self-help support? Do you have Alcoholics Anonymous support? Do you have drug addict anonymous support? Do you have this program and that program and this event and that event? And can my kid play video games with the youth pastor? And things that we were never intended to do. And look, I'm not saying that those aren't possibly, some of them, good things to do. No, I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that the one and only function of the church from a biblical perspective is to preach and teach the gospel with the goal of discipling saved people and reaching lost people. Now, look, those individual ideas might help with people being discipled. If you have a drug addict who gets saved, obviously he's going to need help with the drug problem. If you have someone who's addicted to pornography, obviously after they get saved, they're going to need some assistance with that problem. Or alcohol, or lying, or gossiping, or gluttony, whatever. Obviously, they're going to need assistance in their day-to-day life to get through those problems. But you don't overcome those problems with cookies and Kool-Aid. You overcome those problems with the Word of God and the teaching of the Word of God, and not merely just the preaching and the teaching, but the acceptance of the reciprocating audience of that individual who should be saying, okay, you teach and preach and I will apply. And all too often the teaching and the preaching occur and the application does not. And it doesn't matter how many cookies and Kool-Aids and coffee bars you have. If you have a church that says, you know, you're right, but I don't care, you can forget it. You can preach till you're blue in the face. Not telling you to quit, by the way. I'm not telling you to quit. You keep doing what you're doing, Jeremiah hung in, you can hang in, okay? But what I want you to understand is that that's the United States, that's not the world. There's great revivals and great missions being done in Mexico, in South America, in China, in India, in Japan, literally in every other nation but European nations and us. The places where Christianity has been for about 1,000 years, we have forsook it. But all these other countries, they realize what we have and they and what we know, and they realize the God of the Bible is the one and only God, and they are doing something with that information, and we are not. We are instead saying, well, if God doesn't give me my coffee bar this week, I'm not witnessing to somebody. I cannot, no, Lord, you know how I am. I cannot witness or invite this lady to church at 6 o'clock in the morning. I have not had my espresso yet. That's the kind of just absolute horrible, wretched immaturity that exists in the American church. And it is quite frankly disgusting. And so I understand why everyone would feel like this question is real, and why you might even say, well, we already have the degrading of the church, Pastor Zach, and so clearly we're fulfilling that principle that you're saying exists in Revelation, and I'm here to tell you, no, we're not. Until you see that on a worldwide scale, that we're not even remotely in the ballpark of what is described as existing in Revelation. And so I hope that that answers your question. I do hope that if you were absolutely terrified by that question, that it gives you a little bit of an ease of mind. However, I'm also going to say that if you're absolutely terrified about that question, it's time to get your life right with God, whether that's you need salvation or you need to get back into going to church and studying your Bible and praying and witnessing and, oh, I don't know, living like you actually believe what you say you believe. Okay. And thirdly, if you're on here and that question upsets you or made you mad or, you know, you didn't like that response, I'm here to tell you right now that it is far better that God's people continue to get to work and see souls saved than for many, many souls to end up in hell simply because you and I are tired of working. Because I think at the end of the day that there's two places that question stems from. One is from being absolutely terrified to walk outside of your own house because you live in the United States and things are scary right now. Or number two, a desire to just be rid of this world and not have to be here anymore. And I hate to burst your bubble, but if you fall into that second or first category, your walk with God has ended a long time ago, and it's time for you to get back on the correct path. Because as a child of God, you should wake up every day living like it is your last day and last opportunity to not only live like a child of God, but to lead someone to God. And if that is not at all where your heart is, and how you view the question of the end of the world or the great tribulation, end times, whatever flavor of phrasing you want to use, then you're part of the problem of why this question is being asked so much and why this question is really the wrong question to be asking to start with. Because it shouldn't be, are we in or near the end times? It should be, if I feel as if I'm in the end times, what can I do to see more souls saved? What can I do to become a better follower of Christ? What can I do to help keep the world somewhat intact and maybe see some souls saved before the end does indeed come? And so that is the question. Do you, Pastor Zach Ebarb, believe we are in or near the end times? And my simple, shallow answer to that question to summarize everything is no. No, I don't. And from at this present moment, I would say it's not going to happen in my lifetime. Doesn't mean something major can't happen tomorrow that would change my opinion on that answer. But as of this moment, presently 7:51 on January 16th, my answer to that question is no. And so I hope that this gives you something to think about. If you have any follow-up questions or if you want to debate it, get in the comments, let me know. We'll talk about it. We'll cuss and discuss it. I'll let you know right now I'm not going to cuss and discuss it with you too terribly much because, as I said at the beginning, I could be right, I could be wrong, and I could be both, literally all at the same time, and so could you. So if you want to have just an educated swap of ideas, that's fine. If you're one of those people that it's pre-trib or hellfire, or it's mid-trib or hellfire, or post-trib or pre-post-trib or hellfire, I'm not going to play that game with you. Okay, I got more important things to do than to walk around in the ether of not knowing what in the world we're even talking about because we have no definitive way to prove either side of the argument. Okay. And so next week, Monday, 7:00, and hopefully no snow and no rain, so no technical problems, we got a question from one of you guys that is, it's going to be kind of fun. And what I mean by kind of fun is, that for me, it's kind of a comedic question. But I do know that shockingly enough, because I actually looked at some statistics about this this week, there are a lot of Christians that believe this is real and true, which really, it really did shock me quite a bit. But our question is, are ghosts or the supernatural? And when this particular person asked the question of supernatural, it was more like poltergeist, that's the word. I always had to think about it. That and oh, what was something else? I think they said specters, or I don't know. It sounds like they watch a lot of horror movies, okay? Our ghost or the supernatural, meaning, phenomenon, aliens out in the cornfield, whatever. Are those real? And so we're going to have a discussion about that. We're going to talk about, first of all, to kind of give a generic answer to the question, but then we're going to go into detail about what would be a better question or what would be a more correct question. And asking these, because the simplest answer to this question is going to take us about 2 minutes next week, but we're going to have a full out long conversation about this idea: are ghosts or the supernatural real? And so you guys log in for that. If we get the chance this week, we might be able to record it. I'm hoping we get the chance this week to record it. We're a little snowed in where I am, and snowed in means that I have a little bit more time in a week than I normally would have. So maybe we can record this one and move on to the next question that we got, which was a was really is gonna be it's gonna be a fun one, but not in the silly sense of fun, but more in the it's a very, very deep question, very well thought out question. And it's about one of my favorite people in the Bible, so that makes it 100% better. So make sure take the time to kind of keep an eye. If you don't follow the podcast, make sure you do that, because if you do, and we do get the chance to record one this week, as soon as we publish it, I'll send you a little notification thing that says, "Hey, that guy found some time to record an extra one this week for us to enjoy." But if not, it'll send you a notification on Monday that, hey, we've gone live, so that you can come in and listen to the podcast and be a part of this very interesting discussion about are ghosts or the supernatural real. And so, as always, hope that everybody has an excellent week. We love all our listeners. We pray for all of you. Even if we just see the usernames, we write them down. We pray for you guys. I hope that all of you have a wonderful week. If you're in the snow like we are, take the time to enjoy it.